This is Katie McCowan, and you are listening to the Best Day Ever podcast. Hello, and welcome to the Best Day Ever podcast. I'm Katie McCowan, and I am so glad that you are here with me today. I am so excited about the guest that we have on the show today. As you know, we've been in the middle of a series on self-care. And if you go back and listen to the very first series of the month of March that introduced this series, we talked about how the very best self-care is to let God care for you. And so over the course of this series, we've kind of transferred the talk from self-care to soul care. And I just couldn't think of a better person to join us to talk about this than my friend, Susan C. Hey, Susan, how are you today?
Hey, Katie, I am great. And I'm so glad to be here.
And so I wanted Susan to, I told her, I want you to start by just telling us a little bit about yourself, because I want you, as Susan and I dive into this conversation about soul care, I want you to have some context for just an everyday, just run-of-the-mill, normal day in the life of Susan. So Susan, tell us about yourself. I'm trying not to laugh.
If you already know that this is going to make some of the women listening, it's going to make their eyes bug out and their hair stand up on the end. And they're like, what? Yes. So I am Susan C. I live here in Austin, Texas with my husband. He and I are the proud parents of 7 children. That'll be the first mic drop.
That's right. So that's the first moment where the jaw dropped.
We have 1 boy, 6 girls. At the time of this recording, our children are age 24 down to 11. We are homeschooling parents. Second mic drop.
There you go.
We have been homeschooling for the past 20 years. This is our 20th year of homeschooling. And we also have our own business in real estate, and that's what puts food on the table and helps us to create jobs. And we have a whole team of employees that we manage, and that is, I guess, a good wrap on life. And then, of course, add to that, then I have my own podcast, the Mentor for Moms podcast. And when we're not in the midst of COVID, I'm traveling all over the nation, encouraging moms to be more intentional and live on purpose with their families.
Okay, so so in a nutshell, that's all that Susan does, you know, so much free time, I can only imagine. And yet, I just love how you even presented what you do in ministry, because what I have been able to observe as a friend of Susan's, which has been so sweet, is the way that as much as you have going on in your personal life, just being a wife, being a homeschooling mother, being, you know, someone who runs a business in partnership with your husband, your commitment to your ministry is it flows from your desire to help the rest of us do this better, really, to help the rest of us understand that we can be wives and mothers and we can have full schedules, but we can do it fueled and filled. We don't have to do it exhausted and even alone. And so the first thing I want to ask you, Susan, because I know that the other thing about Susan, you guys, is that she's very real. There's no, like, you know, I've come in here and everything in my house is perfectly arranged and picked up and my makeup is on and my hair is done, because I don't know how everybody can't get it together. That is not who Susan is. She's very real and very transparent and honest about the struggles that come with just everyday life. So Susan, I want to ask you to start with, tell us about some of the, you know, as we talk about soul care, what are some of the challenges that you have faced or are facing in prioritizing that in your life?
First, I love that you let them know that I do not come into this place and into this conversation as if I have it all together. I feel like I'm a mom in the trenches with everybody else. And this is a messy, challenging space, but it's one that still can just fill us with such joy and delight and moments to refresh us when we just about ready to give up. So I think that my challenge daily is to remember that this is a unique position that I've been privileged to have. And that is one where I have these sweet people that call me mom. And that's not something I want to take lightly, but it challenges me because there are these expectations that I have on what it means to be the mom that my kids need and deserve and still live in this place of taking care of me and the needs that I have unique and separate from them. So there's this weird space of trying to care for these people and help them and raise them and love them and still ensure that I'm not doing it from an empty place or a dry place or a place that's run ragged. And I just want to keep trying to pretend that it's not as raw and overused and overtaxed as it has been in the past. So remembering that when I fill up, when I heal, when I rest, when I enjoy life and not just endure it, that I am then positioning myself to do the work of motherhood in a way that honors Christ, that really honors the truest needs of my children and not just those immediate needs that cry out. And I think that I should hurry up and rush and go do something about that.
Okay. I just feel like you hit on so many things just now that it would have been great to have a pen and paper. And for those of you that are listening, the great news is that you can back this up and put down some bullet points, because I feel like you gave us some things in just the simplicity of what you just said that are huge. And so the first thing that I want to ask you about, you mentioned caring for the needs of your people, but not doing it. And you described it so well. You used words like empty. And I can't think of some of the other words, like, but just fatigued. And I think ragged may have been a word. And I hear these words and I know that I can identify with them. Mm-hmm. And I know that so many of our listeners can identify with them, because we try to care for the affairs of our lives and the people that we love so often from that place. Mm-hmm. So let me ask you, Susan, and I know that, I mean, it won't be that we'll never face a day where we feel like that. I mean, there will be times that we care for our people and our circumstances from that place. Mm-hmm. But why is it so important that we try to care for our people? Because you kind of ended with this, that we try to maintain a place of fullness that overflows. Why is that so important? What difference does it make when we care for people from that place versus the empty place?
Yeah, I think perspective and position makes all the difference. And, you know, it's like trying your best to care for them, care for, let's just say, the basic needs, right? Like you want to prepare that meal for them because everybody's hungry and they're always hungry. But I think the food just tastes better when it's served with love instead of like with this commitment, like, well, like, here, let's eat. It reminds me, tell me if this brings up a memory for you, of the movies we used to see, like the after school specials, and they would be going through the lunch line and there would be the lunch lady that just kind of slings food on the table, yes. Right?
Yes. She has a hairnet on. Like I have a picture of her in an apron.
She's got the hairnet on and she's just slinging food like, here, eat. And I think that we as moms can get, when we're in that ragged, raw, exhausted place, that we're just slinging food. We're just slinging stuff around and we're like, here, eat. People, do what you need to do. Like, here's your needs met. But wouldn't it be more delightful to eat food that's served with love and care? Well, what it takes to get to that place is that mom, the us, us talking about ourselves here, we need to be able to have a place where we can refresh and refuel, where we can come out of our rooms and enter into our kitchens or enter into the flow of our daily family life with a moment of creativity, of love, of joy, of delight, and not this drudgery of like, well, here we go, another day.
Mm-hmm. And I will tell you just in my own life, the difference that I've experienced in those two perspectives, because I understand both. I've experienced mm-hmm. both. Mm-hmm. And even just the differences in my children's eyes when I'm approaching them from that joy filled place, and the expressions on their faces to receive whatever it is that I'm offering them versus, and I will tell you, when I am coming from that empty, ragged place, mm-hmm. I just feel like the tone that surrounds me, wherever it is, whether mm-hmm. it's in a meeting with my ministry team or whether it's in the kitchen, I can tell that the tone is a little more tense. Mm-hmm. It's a little more strained. Mm-hmm. It's a little less, I don't know, maybe just a little quicker to snap, if that mm-hmm. makes sense. Mm-hmm. And so I agree. I have seen such a difference in the environment that we create, depending on our own soul care. Mm-hmm. And then, Susan, you mentioned this just now and before, but the difference even in the environment we create, as far as how we serve, what mm-hmm. we're addressing, what we're talking about, or where our focus is. And so kind of one of the things that you mentioned, and maybe you didn't say it specifically, it's just how I received it, but kind of the difference between meeting the basic needs, serving the food, and meeting the heart needs, yeah. and being able to see what needs to be addressed in the hearts mm-hmm. of the people that are around us. And I've heard you talk about that before. Mm-hmm. I think the example you used was when we're driving around in circles, taking people places, mm-hmm. that's not the only reason we're there. We're not just a chauffeur. So talk a little bit more to that as well.
Yes. Oh, I love to esteem motherhood because I believe it's such a bigger vision that God has than what we allow to be our daily experience. If you listen to the average conversation around motherhood, it is focused on meals and laundry and caring for the house and getting people to activities. And I believe that that's legit work. I think that that's good stuff. But I think it's that and so much bigger. In the same way that if you were managing in a business setting, the manager has a bigger vision than just seeing that the work gets done. The manager also has this responsibility to think ahead to the needs and cast a vision for where that business or that organization is going. And I feel like mm-hmm. in the same way that managers have that role in the business world and in the marketplace, moms have a role in the home of management. It's more than just work. It is management, which means we get to create vision. We get to think ahead to where are we ultimately trying to go. We get to create a sense of core direction and mission in the family. We get to talk about the culture we're creating as a family, and we help to infuse an identity in our children so that they understand who they are from the inside out mm-hmm. and not dictated by the outside in, meaning what other people tell them they see about them or what other people believe they should do or who they are. But you as the mama in your home have infused an identity in your children that they understand who they are deep down to their core. And then they walk out their lives living true to that identity and rising to a standard much higher than anybody else would challenge them with. And I want to really lift a burden off of the shoulders of moms of trying to get everything right. Mm-hmm. And instead say, I want you to cast a vision of purpose and infuse that in your heart and in the hearts of your children.
Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't happen that way when we are stepping into the day empty and ragged and exhausted, because that is when, I'll speak for myself, that's when I just go through the motions. And quite honestly, I'm looking forward to bedtime. And I know, again, I will say again, I know there will be days like that. But what we don't want to do is live every day like that. We don't want to adopt that as just the way that it is. And so in order to have this life inside of us that overflows into the lives around us, in order to have these this space where we cast vision for our home and the people around us, we're going to have to prioritize filling up and caring for our own souls. Not that it's easy. So Susan, let me ask you that question. Can you share one of maybe your best practices for how you care for your soul in the midst of everything going on, all that is calling out to you in demand, and all of your list of things to do? Share one of your best practices for how you keep soul care a priority and how you do that every day.
Well, I will just share a little bit about where my life is, my current state of my life. Over the past 6 months, I've been fighting an incredible fight with my health. I've had some serious health challenges to overcome. And by God's grace, one by one, I am getting better and stronger and healthier. But in this time of healing and recovery, I've had a lot of time to reflect on how I have been practicing self-care, how I have been really looking to create a space for that to happen, as well as caring for my soul. And I was sad when I looked back at what I thought was good, what I thought was a cool thing that I was doing and strides I was making, and realizing that it looked good on the outside, but it wasn't truly caring for the deepest needs in my heart and my soul. And now that I have been forced to sit down, be still, I've been recognizing that I can sit in a chair and be still and still not have my soul be still, still have my spirit stirring, my mind racing. And when the scripture says, be still and know that I am God, being able to still my mind, being able to still my heart, as well as still my body, and do them all at the same time, is really that truest sense of saying, as I am still, I am all the more aware that God is God. And my circumstances, the things that want to stir me up and get my mind racing and get my heart anxious, they still exist, but God is bigger than those things. But when I am ragged and raw and I'm exhausted and I'm trying to just go through the motions of the day, my circumstances seem so much bigger than God. My children seem so much more bratty and exhausting. And I just think, I see all of their flaws. I see all of their issues, and I feel the need to correct every single one of them. But when I come out of my room and I interact with my children, when I come from a place of rest and healing, I see their flaws still, but I also see them in light of so much other potential and possibility around them. And I keep them in proper perspective. I don't zone in on their broken spaces and feel the need to cast a big, bright light on them and shine on them and correct them and highlight them. Instead, I notice them and I embrace them in the flow of correcting them with love and from a loving place instead of a fear-filled place. So if I could say that practice that I'm currently in, that this is the space I'm living in, is to operate from a position of rest. I rest first and then I work. And if I try to work and I'm feeling that exhaustion and tiredness, I recognize that there's a place in there that I still need to rest. I need to settle my mind. I need to settle my heart And I maybe need to settle that body too, all at the same time, so that I can keep God in the proper perspective with my circumstances and challenges.
That is so good. And I'm over here just nodding along because I understand it so well. And I think you just put words to something that so many of us have experienced. I want to ask you this. And then when we close, I want to say something about that verse, "Be still and know that I am God," that I love, that I learned just a few years ago. But when you recognize that there is still something to be settled in your soul or in your mm-hmm. thoughts, mm-hmm. how do you do that? What is your process of settling?
One of the biggest important parts of that is naming what it is that's unsettling me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will say, well, it's because the kids are just being loud and I was trying to get some work done and they just won't leave me alone. But that's one level of it. But if I sit with it and I say, what's really at the heart of this? Maybe I'm feeling pressured by a deadline, or I don't feel adequate for what I need to do, or I'm frustrated because it's not coming together like I want it to. And I feel like I'm letting myself down with my goals. I'm letting other people down who are counting on me. And the kids making noise was just one more thing. It was like they were the straw that just sent me into this whole like, I can never get anything done because everybody's always coming to my room. When really it was already an issue brewing underneath. My mind was already racing ahead and having all kinds of worry and doubt and stress and frustration. And I took it out on that last thing, and it happened to be my children, or it happened to be the phone or whatever else that I might blame at the time. So for me, that first step looks like naming it and really getting clear on, this is a moment where I am not trusting that I can absolutely do the work that I've been called to do. Or this is a time where I'm having self-doubt. And I want to build my confidence in the fact that I have been called to do this work, and God will equip me and he will provide me with the answers. And he's always right on time. I can trust that. And once I've named it, I'm able to put it in its proper perspective to who God is and what God can do and will do, because he promised he would.
Mm-hmm. That's huge, because I feel like there's always so many layers to what's happening in our thoughts, to what's happening in our hearts. And so often we never get much further than the first layer. Mm-hmm. And that's where the change happens. And it does require us to be a little more attentive than just kind of dealing with what happened just right in front of us. But I think if we pause in those moments where we see ourselves acting from a place of emptiness or frustration or fatigue. And when we pause, sometimes we don't have to carry the weight or the burdens that we are. Like you just said, Susan, sometimes it's self-doubt that doesn't have to be there, mm-hmm. that we have no reason to doubt because of who God is in us and through us, or we have mm-hmm. no reason to feel the pressure because we can count on God to handle things that we're trying to handle on our own. And that is such a big step, like you said, Susan, towards true stillness and rest. Mm-hmm. And so what I wanted to say about Psalm, I think it's Psalm 46:10. I hope I'm accurate in saying that that's the "be still and know that I am God" verse. And what I've heard that verse and I love it. There's even just saying it, hearing it, kind of just creates such stillness and that feeling of rest. But what I want you to do is go read that entire chapter if you're listening, because the events, the circumstances that are described surrounding that verse are not still and quiet mm-hmm. at all. Mm-hmm. They're like, if the mountain is thrown in the sea, kind of a thing, like something we hope we never see, right? Like kind of worst case scenario things. Mm-hmm. And that's when the psalmist says, be still, or when God says, be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. And so I think that sometimes we might look around and say, I don't have time for that. I'm sorry, there's just too much going on. There's too much to handle. There's too much to address. There's too much to do. I cannot be still right now. Mm-hmm. And I just want to encourage you that the Bible says, even in kind of the craziest of situations, mm-hmm. be still and know that I am God.
Yes. Okay. So I once had a friend who was doing a teaching on peace. And she said, I want you to get these images in your mind of these two scenes. So one is a deer by a stream, you know, picture wildflowers all around, butterflies floating, and the deer is approaching the stream and getting a drink. And then the other scene I want you to imagine is a lighthouse. And this lighthouse is doing its thing. It's shining the light off into the darkness because it's surrounded by a storm with raging winds, and it's got big waves crashing up against the rocks and up against the side of the lighthouse. And she said, when you picture those two images, which one would you say describes peace? And I was like, of course, it's the deer.
The deer in the water.
Yes, with the wildflowers and the butterflies. Hello. Like I could almost just hear the soft music playing in the background.
Right.
And she said, but by nature, the deer is a skittish animal. Like even approaching the water, the deer is unsettled. It's going for water because it needs it, but it's constantly searching for danger. Its ears are always twisting and turning and listening for the signs of maybe something moving in that could harm it. It is not a peaceful scene for the deer. The deer mm-hmm. is an unsettled animal. She said, but the lighthouse was built for storms. It's built to stand in the midst of storms and shine its light so that ships can come in safe to harbor. She said, peace is on the inside of us, on the inside of that lighthouse. It's settled. All is well. It was built for this. And that's what we have on the inside of us. So when the waves of life are crashing against us, and when the storms are brewing all around us, and when life feels dark and we're uncertain, we can remember that we are settled on a rock that's solid and stronger than I. And we were settled in place and put in position for such a storm as this, for such a moment as this. And we can have peace deep down on the inside because we don't have to be unsettled and unsure about our circumstances or our protection. Those things have already been taken care of.
So I'm trying not to scream in the microphone right now, because I mean, this just deserves a woo. Like this is, I'm just saying it does. And if you are listening and you want to do that in your car or wherever you are, I mean, I think it's time for that. Just woo. And I do want to say, I just absolutely love the lighthouse analogy. I actually, in the Bible study, She Smiles Without Fear, that came out on January 1st that I wrote, I use this, the lighthouse, in that same analogy about how she stands because that's what she was made for. Mm-hmm. She stands in the storm. And there's a whole chapter in there about pursuing love. And so much of what we've talked about today is a part of how we can smile without fear of the future when we pursue love. And we talk a lot about how to do that. And this conversation just reminded me of that. But I absolutely love that analogy. And what a perfect thing to leave our listeners with in these two pictures. And while the outward circumstances may look one way, mm-hmm. inwardly, we have been given the ability to be still. And know that God is God, no matter what is happening on the outside, and therefore have peace. Mm-hmm. But we're going to have to prioritize that stillness. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, you know, my takeaway from today is that to take care of our souls, we'll have to prioritize not just stillness of our bodies, stillness in our hearts and our minds.
Yes.
Susan, thank you so much for being here today. Do you have any parting words?
I have loved this conversation. I have just a renewed commitment to the stilling of my mind and my heart. And I am honored to be able to link arms with you to encourage other women to do the same.
Amen. And ladies, I just pray that you will find a time today to prioritize being still and knowing that God is God. And when you do, it will help you live every day as your best day ever.